Welcome to the Goal Lines Podcast, your Mid-Missouri football guide. If you don't already subscribe, find us on Apple Podcasts and Google Play.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new season of the News Tribune Football Podcast featuring the Blair Oaks Falcons. I'm your host, Tony Hawley, sitting here with Greg Jackson of the News Tribune. And, Greg, it is time for another football season, and it's another football season for you with the Blair Oaks Falcons, yeah. A team you know very, very well. We've come to expect a lot of things from Blair Oaks, and we probably didn't expect how last season ended for Blair Oaks. So let's start there by looking back a little bit before we look forward, but kind of an odd way to end a season for Blair Oaks and one we haven't really become accustomed to.
It was. I mean, what, first time since 2014 that they didn't win a district title, and the reason they didn't win a district title that year was because Jaden Barr and California were really good. Mm-hmm. Actually, I think the two parallels between the two is the teams they lost to ended up making the state semifinals. I know 9-3. I can't tell you how many times I've heard this offseason how 9-3 is a down season. And to me, I'm just like, I'm sitting here, I'm like, I know it's not up to their standards, but it is so hard to say 9-3 is a down season.
I was going to say, if you told most teams across the state that you'll have a down season and you'll go 9-3, every coach in the state would sign up for it.
Although, if you look at the goal line story in front of you, I use the word bounce back. And I do think that one's fair because they were a very good team. I mean, gosh, they averaged 54 points a game. So it's not like you could say there was anything wrong with the offense.
Sure.
The defense just, you know, again, they were so young on defense last year that they looked really good the first two games, and then they were just, there were shootout after shootout after shootout. If either team was under 30 points in the game, it was kind of a surprise. But, you know, I think there's a potential where they could be a much better team this year, record low. But before we move on to this year, I do want to touch on last year because people are like, well, what happened? What was wrong? I would argue that the Tri-County from top to bottom was about as good last year as it's ever been.
Sure.
Because I've been here since 2016, and for the first 5 years, basically the top of the conference was Blair Oaks and someone else. It's been Eldon. It's been Southern Boone. I think even School of the Osage had a really good season 1 year. And last year it was, you know, three teams, not just two, because you had Blair Oaks, you had Boonville, and you have Hallsville. Boonville in the regular season game just made a great halftime adjustment, took the lead, and never, you know, really gave it back. And I think that was a 6 or 7 point final. The Hallsville game, it just came down to 1 yard. If Blair Oaks converts on 4th-and-1 with less than a minute to go, they win that game, and Hallsville doesn't have an undefeated regular season. So 9-3, but those two regular season losses, they had an opportunity to win. Now, the Mexico game, and we'll probably talk about Dylan Hare a little bit, but when he, you know, when he took that hit to the head and early in the second quarter and didn't return, and you just saw the bottom fall out for that team, really it was Blair Oaks' worst nightmare come true.
Right.
And the thing I do say going back to that, even if he doesn't get hurt, there is no guarantee they win that game because it was the absolute perfect start for Mexico because they forced two turnovers on Blair Oaks' first two possessions, and Mexico scored two touchdowns.
Sure.
And it's 14-0 in the first quarter, and he scored to make it 14-7. Even if he doesn't get hurt, there is no – I mean, Mexico may very well have won that game.
Right.
So, but I would argue, was it what Blair Oaks had been accustomed to? No. Was it still a good season? In my opinion, yes. I mean, you came home with a trophy. You came home with the district trophy.
Right. So, if you look at it from the standpoint of, yes, that's your down year. Well, gosh, that's a good place to start.
There's a lot of teams that are not going to sympathize with that.
Right. If you're going to rebuild from that, that's a good place to start. Then there's a better place to start when we do talk about Dylan Hare because, again, it's we've grown accustomed to having Hares as quarterbacks at Blair Oaks. This will be the last year that happens. This will be a sad thing when it ends, but it's also like, again, if you're going to rebuild, gosh, let's rebuild with Dylan Hare, you know, after the kind of season that he had, and you basically just say, that's a kid that, again, you don't get those very often. No. They've gotten lucky enough to have three of them in a row, but again, if you're going to be rebuilding, let's start with Dylan Hare.
No, and really, don't get me wrong, they had great skill players last year, especially at running back, and it was a typical Blair Oaks offense. But I think you saw because of the shootouts, he never came out of the game because there was never really a running clock until maybe the absolute very end.
Right.
So he really did a lot of the work. I think, you know, if I remember right, the Eldon game, I think he had 599 total yards.
Right.
It was pretty balanced. It was pretty close to 300 passing, 300 rushing. I mean, he broke the single season rushing record, which I never thought a quarterback would do that at Blair Oaks. Now, moving into this year, you know, talking to Ted LePage, I don't think we're going to see him nearly run as much. Not because of the hit he took to the head, but simply because he was like, we became way too dependent on him and him alone at a skill position.
Right.
He's like, we've got these other guys. We are going to utilize. It's not that we have to utilize them. We are going to utilize them. You know, they're really set in the backfield. They've got three different guys they can go to. You've got the Eli Luckett. He's a move in from Maryland, and gosh, he looked really good in the Jamboree. I mean, he averaged about 8 or 9 yards a carry on 8 attempts. And most of those were up the middle, which to me that was like throwback to Jake Van Ronslin when he had set the school single season rushing record in 2016.
Sure.
You've also got Brady Kerpler who can run, and really a receiver. I think they're going to be very balanced there. It's not like you're going to have one standout receiver and teams are going to double-team that guy and you're going to force Dylan to throw the other ones. I think that's going to also be very balanced. I know Alec Weberg looked really good. Joey Wilde, I believe, if I remember, I think he made a fantastic catch in the Jamboree. You know, you got Nick Closser and Adam Hall, who, you know, this will be his second year in the program. I believe he transferred down from Columbia. So I really think last year was more for him adjusting and learning the offense. I think he's going to be a bigger piece of that passing game as well. So, I mean, you look passing, rushing, they look great there. And honestly, offensive line, which is where they probably half the seniors that graduated last year came from the offensive line. And they're still good there. You got Wyatt Bennett at center. He's a two-time All-State lineman. You've got... let me look here. Caden Helscher was, not last year, but in their state title season in 2020, he was an All-State lineman. And honestly, the other starting lineman, if you take a look, is, you know, Ethan Tobin and Cole Peters and Justin Atnip. You know, they've got probably a couple dozen starts between the two of them as well. So it's hard to say. Like, one of the things, they averaged 53.8 points per game last year, and that's just mind-blowing. I would argue there's a chance they may be better offensively this year, but not quite average that scoring. I think it's just going to be so much more efficient. I think you're going to see them drag out drives. They're not going to try to, you know, they're not going to try to have Dylan Hare throw a 60-yard touchdown pass or break loose for a 50-yard run. I think you're going to see them milk the clock more, try to dominate time of possession and still score touchdowns at the end.
My biggest question that I have for you about the offense may seem like a stupid one because we are just starting the 2022 season. I'm kind of curious about the 2023 season from this standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to be a little bit less dependent on Dylan Hare. And we love the fact that we still have Dylan Hare, so you're spoiled by that. My question is, could we maybe see a little bit less of Dylan Hare in certain situations so we can maybe see who may be replacing Dylan Hare next year? Who do we have maybe at backup quarterback? And is there a hope that maybe if we do get some of these blowout games, we can maybe start auditioning somebody? Because for the first time in, what, a decade, you won't have a Hare at quarterback, and now you'd be curious about who might be that guy. So what's that position look like? And again, I'm not saying that he's injury-prone, but if you do have a bad scenario, like where if he gets injured again, who's the backup, and maybe what does that mean for this year and the future?
Well, first off, I'm going to say this. I don't, as much as I talked about the Tri-County last year, I don't think it's going to be nearly as good this year. I think Boonville's still going to be really good.
Okay.
I think Southern Boone will be a good team. They've got a new coach. I think Hallsville just graduated way too many seniors. For Hallsville, this will truly be a rebuilding season, in my opinion. The reason I say that is I think you're going to see more turbo clock games, and you know, Dylan will not play nearly as many full games as he did last year.
Okay.
So I think that's going to allow some other quarterbacks to get some looks. And obviously with the Jamboree, you know, they did 12 varsity and 6 JV plays for each of the two scrimmages. And who we got to look at were, you know, Wyatt Meldrum, he's a junior this year, and, you know, Tyler Bax is a freshman. Wyatt Meldrum, I believe, got injured in a JV game and missed a few weeks last year, and was a great JV quarterback. I mean, it was one of those. I want to say it was his non-throwing hand injury. So you know, okay, he was able to come back quicker than if it was his throwing hand. But Tyler Bax, I was really impressed with him in the Jamboree. And again, what's going to bode well for him is, as a freshman, he's already 6'2".
Okay.
And he was able to make some nice throws. I believe he did have a touchdown pass in the Jamboree. So White will be the senior next year, but it would not surprise me if Tyler shows some improvements and you get to see him as a starter as a sophomore, because otherwise, you know, you'd only have Wyatt as a starter for 1 year next year, and then you'd have Tyler for 2 years. So
right,
you don't know if it's going to be that or if Tyler's going to find a way to take over as a sophomore starting quarterback with Wyatt backing him up. But I do think it won't be the end of the world when Dylan Hare graduates. Will it be the same? Absolutely not.
Right,
but it's not like they're starting from ground zero. I do think they'll have a good option at quarterback next year.
Yeah. So, again, you know, we did have that high-powered offense last year, and you needed it at times because, like you mentioned, the defense did give up its fair share of points. You did have to win some shootouts last year where maybe how do we think that maybe that translates into this year, because you do have, you know, a fair amount of returnees on the defensive right side of the ball this time.
And that was one of the things I addressed with Coach LePage whenever I met with them at their first intra-squad scrimmage at the end of the first week of practice, and that was, I wanted to talk to them about the defense because there were so many names back. Really, Will Libert is not back, and he was like their second leading tackler at linebacker last year. Zach Harrigan, I believe, played some defense last year too, but he was mostly utilized as a wide receiver. So really, for the most part, a lot of these defensive players are back. The one thing I noted in my preview story about the defense toward the end was what jumped out to me was the number of big plays they gave up, because I thought that was what was detrimental to them. It wasn't that teams were grinding out drive after drive after drive on them. They were just allowing like a 40-yard touchdown or 50-yard touchdown. If you allow 5 40- or 50-yard plays per game, that might be 35 points right there. So that was I asked him about that. I was like, you know, what are you all doing to try to limit those plays and make teams have to grind out drives? And he said, we really addressed tackling. You know, they brought in, you know, you see the five, you see the five body sleds that a lot of teams will work with. He's like, we've got a couple of individual sleds that would really help work on tackling.
Okay.
One of the things, Ted LePage is a big weight room guy, but he's like, one of the things they really addressed this offseason is not just lifting weights to lift weights, but how to go about the weight room to lift weights to benefit them when it comes to tackling on defense.
Okay.
More about, like, you know, trying to get force, like maybe work more on your core as opposed to just, you know, working on the biceps and everything. I think that what I saw in the Jamboree was, the first three plays against Helias looked a lot like last year. I think they got 12 plus yards on each of those first three plays, but they did settle down a lot after that. And honestly, against Southern Boone, I think they had out of the 18 plays, maybe 7 or 8 were for loss.
Okay.
They did show that they are doing a better job of tackling on that first contact and not letting broken tackles really kind of snowball and make for a rough night. So I'll be curious to see these first two games, because we'll probably talk about those in a little bit. They're playing two really tough non-conference opponents, so we'll be kind of interesting to see what kind of growth they make in that department.
Yeah. Yeah, you took the next question out of my mouth. The season does start 7 o'clock Friday night against Maryville at the University of Central Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
This is a game we've become accustomed to, and I think, it's a game that the Falcons have, I think, surprisingly won the last couple meetings of. Surprisingly easy, I guess I should say. Not surprisingly won, but surprisingly easy. But this is still one of those games where I think it's a great season opener for you. Again, this is a school that needs, I think, to kind of keep pushing and testing itself a lot of times, especially I think they've gotten used to playing in big game scenarios, so you might as well have a big game scenario for your opener as well, and that's what this is served for, is what, the last 5 years now.
Yeah, and I mean, the Blair Oaks has won the last five meetings against Maryville after they lost that 2017 state semifinal game, and really, for a while there, I wasn't sure if they were going to continue this. Not because, you know, Matt Webb was sour and was like, is tired of losing it, but if you think about it, you're losing a home game every 2 years because it's always going to be played at a neutral site, and no matter what, every year you're going to travel at least an hour and a half to 2 hours to play this game. Last year was at least Summit North, which was honestly about as close to halfway between the two schools. This year's at UCM, a little bit closer drive for Blair Oaks. But I mean, that again, that's a lot of travel and whatnot. But you know, I agree with you. I like that they always play this. I know it looks lopsided, and honestly, the final score last year was 40-6. But I want to say it was a one possession game late into the third quarter, and Blair Oaks just dominated the last 14 minutes of that game. So it was really much closer than for a majority of the game than the final score indicated. Maryville is a lot like Blair Oaks in the fact that kids graduate. Somebody puts on the same number and plays just like them the following year. When people read the Blair Oaks preview story, they're going to see that quote from Ted LePage, and I agree with him. I think that's true about these same teams, and that's also why I mentioned the coaches, how long they had been with those two programs, and their records. They're pretty darn close.
Right.
And really, Matt Webb, I think he's lost about 18 games since he took over at Maryville, and five of those are to Blair Oaks. So, I mean, even though they're not winning this matchup, he loves that matchup because it does get them ready for the tough season ahead and the postseason. And Maryville did win it, even though they were 7-5 last year. They did win a district title. They were a very good team. This is going to be an interesting game because it's the wing tee, but you never know what kind of variation of the wing tee we're going to see with Maryville, because it depends on personnel, it depends on what they want to throw at Blair Oaks. And Blair Oaks, I will say, they play enough teams in the regular season that run the wing tee that they aren't familiar with it. I mean, Eldon's going to run the wing tee every year. Osage now with Shannon Jolly there, they're going to see the wing tee. So it's not like it's a one-and-done type thing for them. It's like, we're going to see this now, and we're going to see it a handful of times down the road.
Right.
And I'll be fans are going to like what they see out of the Blair Oaks offense, especially when we talk about the run game and how we even saw them run out of the wishbone for a couple of plays, and one of them was a play-action pass that led to a touchdown. I think that it'll be interesting to see what kind of what kind of scenarios that Ted LePage throws at Maryville, but it'll also be interesting to see what Blair Oaks' defense does, because remember, again, they held Maryville to 6 points in this game last year. So,
right.
I mean, I know they gave up 30-plus points in a handful of games, but they did look really good in this game. Can they replicate that this year?
Yeah, which I guess then gets us to the natural progression of the prediction point of the podcast.
Yeah.
I know what recent history says. Does recent history continue?
I think it does, just because, you know, Dylan Hare has looked really good in the second half in a lot of these games. The 2020 season opening you can kind of throw out. That one was definitely lopsided just because a handful of Maryville players weren't there due to COVID-19 quarantine. The 2020 state title game was a shootout. Last year's game was close for, you know, 2.5, close to 3 full quarters. I think this one will be close. I do think, you know, Maryville's bringing back a couple of All-Staters. You know, Cooper Lowe has looked really good at linebacker for them. I think this is a game where Blair Oaks' offense won't always have its way, but I do think it will score often enough to win, and I do think the defense will come up with some key stops. Even if they try to throw the ball, I do think Blair Oaks has the edge there in the secondary just because they have so many of those guys that are returning and they play both ways. I think this is a game. I'll go out and say Blair Oaks wins this one 42-28.
All right. That should do it for this week. For Greg Jackson, I'm Tony Hawley saying thanks for listening.
For more information about this week's game, pick up a copy of the Goal Line section in Friday's News Tribune and get game updates and more prep sports content all week by following Greg Jackson on Twitter at ActionJackson05. That's Action, J-A-X-O-N, 05. Thanks for listening.